again, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinovellis, and we are learning so much about our teams. And one of the things, in case you haven't figured it out and you're new to this game of college basketball, don't get too high and don't get too low in November. Yes, all the games count, but you're not going to win a championship of any kind in November. You might lose your way towards a championship, but you're not going to win. And don't get too high and thinking that you're getting ahead of yourself over huge wins in November. And don't get too low or distraught. Just know it's a long season. 30 games. We're only a third of the way through this season. We still have two-thirds of the way to go. So what am I getting at? Maui. Whatever happened to UConn and Maui is all in the past. The Bahamas. Whatever happened to St. John's and the Bahamas, they seem to have resurrected themselves and righted the ship. Although I like UConn's positioning right now a lot more than St. John's, but both are trending up. On the opposite end of that spectrum, Seton Hall, all the good that they did in Charleston, all the good feelings and good vibes that came out of it. Boy, oh boy, talk about taking one step forward and two steps back. I mean, we don't know what to make of this team. We don't know which way is up and which way is down. And Rutgers, even though they went 1-2 in Las Vegas, Rutgers fans were feeling like, hey, we can play with any team. We have a team that if we could just fine-tune some things and finish out games, we can play with anyone. Well, and then came the harsh reality of life on the road in the Big Ten. And wait a minute. Maybe we can't play with everyone just yet on the road, but the good news is there's still time. There's still time left for Seton Hall, although it's getting late early around here, as Yogi Berra once said. And there's still time for Rutgers. And there's still time for us to get into all of that content and more on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. We will do that after I thank my sponsor, Mike Supa, of Remax Revolution. Mike is a trusted name in real estate, so if you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. And don't forget to tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So, where do we begin? Let's begin with UConn, shall we? As I said, whatever happened in Maui stayed in Maui. It was a disaster of all disaster proportions. An eighth place finish for the two-time defending national champs. But even without Alex Caravan, this team is still growing and still very good. How do we know? Because they beat a very good and ranked Baylor team without Alex Caravan. And how about that win at Texas? Let's start with that and then work backwards. Welcome back, Alex Caravan. Yes, he missed the two games because of a concussion, but it was like he never left. UConn came into a batty atmosphere in Austin, Texas. That is one of the great atmospheres. I'm not going to say the best, but it is certainly, you know, a top 10, top 15 atmosphere in college basketball. Even Matthew McConaughey, who was all Hook'em Horns, Texas's own, was there in person to see Texas battle UConn. And the key to this game was UConn taking the crowd out of it early. It was 11-4 at the first media timeout. UConn was in control. They never trailed in this game. And it would only balloon from there. A 7-point lead became a 22-point lead. That is how you do it on the road. Take the crowd out of it. Don't give them a chance. Sure, it became a little bit of a game in the second half, but it was never, ever too close for comfort. All right, first half was all about Caravan and solo ball. Magnificent. Between the two of them, they had 27 points. And Caravan, for a guy who missed, you know, a portion of the last game against Dayton and missed two more games, he played all 20 minutes in the first half. The only player for UConn to do that. So that set the tone. And then second half, UConn led by 20 at the half. Caravan started right where he left off. Started out with an absolute dime, a backdoor feed to Samson Johnson for a three-point play. And boy, was he big in this game. And then hits a step-back three. And that was just to serve notice that, hey, we are in control of this game. And Texas, it is going to be a long game for you guys. All right? Second half was also about Hassan Diarra. Boy, what a game did he play. He only had 5 points, but he had his fingerprints all over this game. Even afterward, Dan Hurley said, that is the way I want Hassan Diarra to play. I want him to play like a true point guard and set up his teammates. Diarra could not have played any better. A career-high 11 assists in this game. Huge impact on the game. UConn was sharing the ball. They were unselfish, played great team basketball. They finished with 21 assists on 28 field goals. That is the mark of a team that is moving the basketball and sharing it. They scored inside. They scored outside. It didn't matter. 38 points in the paint. Very efficient from three. One of their better three-point shooting performances of the season. 9 of 20. I will take that all day long. And the bigs, we've seen Samson Johnson and Terrace Reed Jr. get into foul trouble this year, especially Samson. But it wasn't so in this game. They were a big part about why UConn held Texas at arm's length in the second half. Johnson and Reed each had 12 points apiece. And, you know, listen, rumors of UConn's death were greatly exaggerated, to borrow a line from Mark Twain, to borrow a line from Dan Hurley, and I quote, maybe the people with the shovels and the dirt, maybe they were too quick to grab the shovel and throw the dirt on us. He said, maybe, we'll see. In other words, we're not dead yet, but we still have a long way to go. And Caravan, for all of his greatness, and he has had some really magnificent, important games for UConn in his first 2.5 years, I was surprised. This was his first career double-double. The first time Alex Caravan had ever been in double figures in rebounds. That's surprising. But, you know, when you have some big guys like Adamas Anogo and Donovan Klingon, guys to clean up the glass, there aren't many rebounds to go around. I get it. 21 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, first career double-double. Surprising, but it shouldn't be. All right, he is that good. And speaking of good, you know, Texas has a freshman in Trey Johnson. I mentioned him last podcast. I'm sure you're aware of him. McDonald's All-American, second leading scorer out of freshmen in the country behind Rutgers' Dylan Harper. And it was tough. I mean, listen, they were guarding him. Hassan Diarra did a nice job on him as much as he could to kind of, you know, force the ball out of his hands. But at the end of the day, he showed why he's a lottery pick. All right. He scored 24 points. I mean, UConn made life tough for him. All right. 24 points. It just shows you how good that guy is. All right. He's on another level. But last time I checked, basketball is a team sport. You're not playing horse in the backyard, okay? UConn, their depth and their talent wore down Texas. Arthur Kaluma is a heck of a basketball player. All right, we saw him for 2 years at Creighton. Then he moved to Kansas State. You know, Texas is going to win a lot of games this year. Hurley noted afterward, and I agree, that is an NCAA tournament team. All right, they're going to win a lot of ball games. That is just a very, very good basketball team, and they're going to make noise in the SEC for sure. But Kaluma and Alexander were not enough for Caravan and McNeely and Diarra and Solo Ball and Samson Johnson and on and on and on and Terrace Reed Jr., right? Just a great team win. And it followed up a huge week for the Huskies because to beat number 15 Baylor at home when you're down by, I believe it was 10 points in the first half, without Alex Caravan, there were some welcome, you know, to college basketball moments. Guys had to grow up quickly as Hurley challenged the team ahead of time, and guys did grow up in that game. Liam McNeely had to play not like a freshman. I mean, he's been great this year. But a guy like Aiden Mahaney, how happy are you for Aiden Mahaney? You know, I'm sure he heard the noise. This kid isn't meant for UConn. He's not meant for this level. Really struggled with his shot. Struggled to find his way on a team loaded with talent. You know, how does he fit in? Well, he fit in quite nicely. And he hit two big threes in that first half that settled things down and really got the crowd going at Gamble Pavilion. You talk about home court advantages. Give me Gamble Pavilion all day long. All right, that crowd was rowdy. They were into it. And by the way, UConn traveled to Texas. Way to go, UConn fans. I think it was Caravan that noted afterward, you know, to hear the UConn chants, UConN, in the stands, like right after the national anthem in Texas. Hats off to UConn fans traveling there. But back home in Gamble, they made a big difference, a big part of that comeback against Baylor as they beat a very talented team, which we saw beat St. John's on a buzzer beater. All right. Aiden Mahaney, good for him, hit three threes in that game, his best game in a UConn uniform, and they needed that shooting performance from him. So UConn sweeps through the Texas tornado of Baylor and Texas, and now they get basically 6 days to prepare for their marquee non-conference matchup of the season, number 7, Gonzaga at Madison Square Garden. Stores South will be rocking on Saturday. UConn will rise in the polls. They'll rise from 25, definitely be in the top 20. And you're talking about a top 10 team in Gonzaga. UConn on a 4-game winning streak. If they win this game heading into the Big East opener against Xavier on December 18th, that's what you're looking at. Ride into the Big East portion of the schedule against a very talented and experienced Xavier team on December 18th. Beat Gonzaga. Now, if they lose, okay, it's not the end of the world. They've still built a resume. Number 15 Baylor and winning against Texas, they'll end up being 2 quad one wins, which UConn was lacking. So now if you beat another quad one team in Gonzaga, now you really have a resume. Now you really help your seeding as you try to get really what you're jockeying for, right? Is that number one seed in the East again? Remember, the regional, the East regional is in New Jersey, Prudential Center. Get that number one seed in the East. Husky fans will travel to New Jersey. We know it. That's way down the corner, okay? That's way, way a couple of months away, but That's what you're playing for, all right? Beat Gonzaga, and you're putting yourself in position to start looking at that, okay? Long season, but we learned and saw UConn bounce back, show resiliency, and guys grew up in a hurry. That's what we saw from UConn, all right? 0-3 Maui hurt them, but these wins over Baylor and Texas, and if they can get Gonzaga, will really help them and offset some of those losses and the hurtness that happened. Meanwhile, St. John's. What a scene it was. I wish I was there. I watched it, every second of it, on television at Carneseca Arena. You know, hats off to St. John's and Rick Pitino and everyone associated with that program. They did Louis Carneseca, basically, you know, the godfather. It's him and Joe Lapchick, a man who bled St. John's, went to St. John's, played for St. John's, brought them to heights that they've never seen since in the Big East and nationally. Just a month or so shy of his 100th birthday when he passed away. They honored him with a ceremony beforehand, and there were tears in the stands. There were tears in the eyes of the coaches and Rick Pitino. He had to come out in that replica ugly sweater. It was perfect. Everything about it was perfect except the beginning of the game against Kansas State. All right. You know, they left the seat open with flowers in honor of Louis. Just a real nice touch. Well done, St. John's. I really thought that, and I tweeted this out, I thought St. John's would respond with their best performance of the season. And they did, but it took them 20 minutes to get there. It was certainly their best half of the season. And overall, most important win, all right? They could not afford to lose this game. And that's exactly what what Rick Pitino said after the game. I think the team was nervous in the beginning. They were clanging shots. They were missing layups. They were reverting to their old nasty habits. They were not hitting shots, and they were not defending the three. That has been an issue at times. And our old friend from Villanova, Brandon Housen, who has shown up in Manhattan, Kansas at Kansas State. Oh, my God. I mean, he was on fire. It's like St. John's didn't even know who this guy was. It's like they didn't know who he was or where he was. They couldn't find him. Housen lit him up 6-for-8 from three in the first half. Had 21 points. It was bad. And it was not looking good when St. John's dug itself a 10-point hole, 31-21. But to their credit, they battled back, and it was very important, all right? They as bad as they played in the first half, they were only down 4. And one of the main reasons, to me, the main reason, was Zubi Ejiofor, who, little did we know, was on his way to a career night. But he had 11 points and 6 rebounds and really established a blueprint for what would transpire in the second half. St. John's cuts it to 4. As poorly as they played, they were only down 4. And then the second half, the Johnnies played without question their best 20 minutes of basketball. Last year, they would have lost this game. How many times did we see St. John's unable last year to put two halves together? Really good first half and just basically shit the bed in the second half. Different time, different era, different players, different team. This is another sign that this St. John's team is not last year's team. That this St. John's team is more connected and more mature and able to handle these critical games and testing moments where they're down, and you face adversity. How do you handle adversity? Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, right? You know, they've let some games slip away that they could have won, but they've shown resiliency like UConn. All right, it's still December. There's still time here. But in those 20 minutes in the second half, they outscored K-State 53-32, plus 21. And for as awful as the defense was in the first half, it was magnificent in the second half. K-State was 0 for 10 from 3. They didn't hit a 3 after halftime. And Housen, who was unstoppable, who looked like Dante DiVincenzo in the first half, had 6 points, pedestrian, in the second half. All right? The defense was magnificent, but the story, and I'm sorry if I buried it, but I was holding the best for last, was Zubi freaking Ejiofor. He was a man possessed. Went for career highs in points and rebounds, 28 and 13. All right? These are numbers that he did against Rutgers in the preseason. We haven't seen this type of dominating man-child performance since he manhandled Rutgers. That game didn't count. This game does. And 9 of those 13 rebounds were on the offensive end. What does that tell you? That tells you he was not going to be denied that basketball. He wanted those balls. He wanted those offensive rebounds. Okay? 9 offensive rebounds is a big, huge number. Huge. Some teams don't get 9 offensive rebounds in games. And let's flash back, because there were games early on that Rick Pitino, and you know he's a master at this, you know he uses the media to get his point across, and he is not afraid to embarrass people publicly, humiliate them publicly, call out their manhood, call out their heart, their desire, their lateral quickness, okay? And he called out Zubi Ejiofor publicly and basically said he's not doing what he's capable of doing. He's not hustling. He's not showing any heart, and I'm paraphrasing. Well, eventually Zubi Ejiofor got the message, and he responded in a resounding way. But he wasn't the only one. So Zubi Ejiofor was the MVP of this game, and he dominated, okay? They're not going to get 28 and 13 every night. But again, we've talked about this. Give us 12 and 8. All right? You're capable of doing that. Give us 11 and 7, 12 and 7, somewhere in that area. He should be averaging upwards of 7 plus 8 rebounds a game. All right? Now, Joel Soriano a couple years ago averaged a double-double. Could Zubi do that? Why not? Why not? But he just isn't doing it consistently enough. That's why I say, 12 and 8, 12 and 7, 11 and 7, somewhere in that area. We'll take it. What else do we see in this game? We saw the return of Davon Smith, who sat out from his one-game team-enforced suspension. All right? He did the crime. He did the time. Not bad numbers, all right? He's going to fill the stat sheet across the board. Probably some nerves in there. All right, only 5 points, but 9 rebounds. That's important. 9 rebounds from a 6-foot point guard. All right, there's Davon Smith's value, and 3 assists. All right, a quiet but efficient game for Kadari Richmond, who started out slow. He was 1 for 5, missed 3 layups in this game. Yes, I counted. All right, just... Again, it was just a microcosm of the team in the first half. But at the end of the day, Kadari put up numbers more like where he should be. 13 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. That's what Kadari does. That's what they need from their graduate senior. And the third member of this three-headed guard system, Simeon Wilcher, that's now back-to-back games in double figures. Nice to see Sim getting back in there because he was in a funk for about 3 or 4 games. All 11 of his points in the second half. He had 12 points last game, 11 this game. Great sign for St. John's because they need all three of their guards. When Richmond, Smith, and Wilcher are cooking like this, and listen, they weren't all on, but they're contributing. They need to get contributions from all three, and when they do, they're going to be tough to beat because you know you're going to get consistency out of R.J. Lewis for the most part, all right? Zuby, when he plays like that, this team needs to get it all together, and they have their guards clicking like that. This is more like St. John's basketball, and this, listen, it's going to be probably a quad 2 win at the end of the season. It's not going to be a quad 1 win, but as Rick Pitino and the players said afterward, there was so much emotion in this building. This was a game they could not afford to lose. They responded from adversity and came back with a brilliant second half. Here's the post-game reaction.
I don't think I would have ever forgiven myself if we lost this game. It's been an emotional week for me personally, not only with my two best friends, but with Lou. And it was really, really important that we get a win for Lou. Great crowd, great second half, a lot of emotion behind the game. And Lou lived a great life. I cry over movies. So when I saw all the players come back and I saw them in church and you see the grief in their eyes, whether it's Chris Mullen or Mark Jackson or Walter Berry and all the guys that came back, it's just somebody special to them left. And the great thing about being a Catholic is celebrating lives. And for my friends who are in their 80s, even though they're best friends, and Lou, who's just shy of 100, we can really celebrate their life. Prior to 1 year ago, Lou basically had a healthy life. And we're real, real proud to represent him in some small way.
Pitino did it right, all right? He was so right when he said that, and his team responded, he responded. So they can put the emotions of this aside. They will honor Louis Carnesecca for the rest of the season. I think they're going to wear that patch. And now they focus on Bryant. Chalk that down as a win. St. John's will then enter Big East play Tuesday, December 17th at home to DePaul, and then Friday, December 20th at Providence. 2 games before Christmas. And oh, how good it would be for St. John's to be riding a 5-game win streak and be 2-0 in conference play. Providence is a very tricky place to play. We know it's one of the best atmospheres. We know it is a huge home court advantage in the Big East. Arguably, the best home court advantage over the last 4 or 5 years in the Big East. But we don't know if this St. John's team, we don't know. They're a yo-yo, all right? And Bryce Hopkins is still getting his legs under him. We know it can be a dominant first team, all Big East performer when healthy. So it's a Providence team that is not necessarily an NCAA tournament team. They're a bubble team. So that is a winnable road game for St. John's. All right. DePaul is much improved this year. That is not an automatic win. So St. John's is capable, more than capable, of winning both games. That's what I'm getting at. But you're looking at an opportunity to really start the Big East on a high right before Christmas. Because then coming out of Christmas, you're playing New Year's Eve at Creighton, And they're not going to be favored in that game because that is going to be a very difficult road game. One of the worst they'll face all season. All right. So the opportunity's there to start 2-0 in the Big East. That's all I'm saying. And if they play like they did in the second half, they'll have a very good chance of getting there. If they play like they did in the first half against K-State, then you know what? They can lose both those games. So that's the St. John's story. All right, let's get to Seton Hall. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. This is the most puzzling team in the Big East. This is the most puzzling team in the Tri-State. I said it in my open. All the good that they did in Charleston and coming out of Charleston with, you know, some big wins over VCU and Florida Atlantic, two very good mid-majors who are going to challenge in their conference. I mean, this team has forgotten how to play defense. They have forgotten their DNA. And they're still in a disarray offensively. I mean, an opportunity on national television to beat a Big 12 team that was very beatable, a team that was in the Charleston Classic with you, a team that lost to Florida Atlantic, a team you beat in Charleston, a team that finished 1-2, a team that you finished higher than in the Charleston Classic, came into your building and ran you out of the building for 30 minutes. Inexcusable. Seton Hall came out sluggish, lethargic, sloppy. I mean, they were just telegraphing passes. And Oklahoma State was, I mean, the Cowboys were like, bish, 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 bish. Right? It's like they came into the OK Corral and were just firing guns. Boom, 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 three, 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 steal, layup. Even when Seton Hall scored, Oklahoma State was beating them down the court for layups. A 15-0 run. In the first 9.5 minutes of this game, Shaheen Holloway called two timeouts. Okay? Two timeouts. Trying to wake up his team. Oklahoma State, at one point, was 11 for 13 from the field. 85%. I'm sure it's happened in the history of college basketball, but I don't remember. Okay? 11 for 13. It was 27-9. And halftime, the statistics just reflected it. Oklahoma State was shooting 61%. They were 7 of 15 from 3, 16-0 on fast break points. 10 Seton Hall turnovers led to 17 Oklahoma State points. This game, and I tweeted this out, was all about tempo. Oklahoma State is one of the fastest playing teams in the country. I believe they're like top 25. And Seton Hall is one of the slowest. They are the fourth slowest team in terms of tempo, all right? Possessions in a game where they're just taking the air out of the ball and there's hardly any possessions, right? Oklahoma State, one of the fastest. Seton Hall, one of the slowest. And which team would insert their will? Well, clearly it was Oklahoma State, okay? Because they inserted their will. I mean, fans were leaving the game. My good friend, we go back to playing flag football at Seton Hall, okay? Tom Buckner. We played, that's how far back we go. We played flag football and won a championship, by the way, over the Pikes. One of the greatest intramural moments of my collegiate intramural career. I'll just throw that out there. All right. Won a flag championship, flag football championship with Buckner. We go way back. He came up to me at halftime and he goes, I'm out of here. I said, you're out of here. He goes, yeah, I can't stand to watch this anymore. I'm out of here. We don't have a team. I don't believe this team can come back. So that's how fed up he was. And he wasn't the only one. But, and I can't blame him. I cannot blame you, Buck. Now, what if? There's still 20 minutes of basketball left. And the fans that were there, to their credit, they were waiting and hoping that Seton Hall would show some life. And if you're a Seton Hall fan, this is what you have to hang your head on. This is what you have to hope for. The last 10 minutes of this game, that's what you hope Seton Hall can bottle. All right? We saw Garway Dual come to life. We saw Scotty Middleton come to life. We saw a team that was pressing, that forced turnovers. We saw a team that was battling. We saw a team that showed heart. We saw a team that was turning it over. We saw a team that was connected, that was together. We saw a team that we did not see in the first half. Nowhere near. Okay? Where was that team the first 30 minutes? I have no idea. But if you're looking for something, then that's what you're trying to hope that Seton Hall can find. Isaiah Coleman scoring 18 points and Scotty Middleton going 4-for-4 from three and Seton Hall scoring 50 points, 50. They couldn't score 50 in a game and they're scoring 50 and a half and shooting 60%. That's what you have. Gus Yeldon, you know, sparking the crowd, coming off the bench to provide this team with a lift. If you're a Seton Hall fan, that's what you're hoping for. But we're tired of the inconsistencies. And afterward, that was the theme. That was the theme from Shaheen Holloway. He made it clear. We have too many players on this team that are inconsistent. And the players who are going to do as I want them to do, they're going to play. And it's time to shorten the bench. This team's 5-5, and they're at a crossroads. This was the coach after the game.
You know, we got to get guys, consistent guys playing at a consistent level. Like, we're very inconsistent. Remember, you got some guys playing really well, and then they don't play that well, then they play really well. We just got to get them playing consistent, keep them confident, and keep building. You know, I'm super disappointed right now. I'm embarrassed that we played in the first half that we played. But there's some things that I can have that I can build on as a coach. And I'm going to build on those things, and I'm going to go back and watch film. And the guys that play the way I want them to play is going to continue to keep playing. Other guys are not going to play. It's just that simple.
Who will receive the message? I also asked the coach about the defense. What has happened to the defense? Here was my question, and here was his response.
This team built its DNA on defense. Why have they lost it, and what is it going to take to get it back?
That question is a loaded question. I'm not sure we lost it. You watch this team play. You watch Oklahoma State play. That's how they play. They want to get up and down. They fast and quick. They shoot a lot of threes. They push in the transition. Not sure we lost it. This game, we just didn't defend like we're capable of defending. I think we still defended pretty well overall. We just got to, you know, play better offense. I thought today in the second half, the offense was better because everybody just moving and playing basketball and not being robots and not just worried about this, worried about that, just playing. And that's how I want these guys to play. I want these guys to play loose and free because I think we got some guys that can make some plays. Just got to continue to keep building.
So agree or not with the way I phrased it, the bottom line is this. This team has to defend, and for whatever reason, whether they forgot to defend or didn't want to defend, they didn't defend. Now, will they start to become a pressing team? Maybe, just maybe, that is the way this team has to play. More helter-skelter, because they're an awful offensive team, an awful half-court team. Unless Garway Dual figures out how to play point guard consistently, and maybe he's getting there, maybe he's turning a corner. Until that happens, Seton Hall is going to have to need to force turnovers and get out and get buckets in transition. They have a week to prepare for Rutgers, and I'm not going to say it's their Super Bowl, but if they lose this game, and I'll credit my friend Jerry Carino on this, if they lose the game, they will be 5-6, and it will be Seton Hall's first non-conference losing record since 1982-83. And that's an era of P.J. Carlissimo's first year and early years where Seton Hall in the Big East, that's rock bottom. The 83 team went 1-15 in the Big East. The 85 team, 1-15 in the Big East. Those are the worst records in Seton Hall in Big East history. Willard's third year, 2012-13, they won 3 games. You have to start to wonder, is this team going to challenge those Seton Hall teams for worst records in Big East history? They have 20 chances. Will they win one? Will they win 3? I don't know, but they have to get things right in a hurry. And the big word, they have to get consistent, because we've seen the players and the team are consistent. They're 10 games in. Either find the switch or this team and this season is going to get lost in a hurry, and it's going to snowball down the hill like an avalanche. And that brings us to Rutgers. They lost again at Ohio State. They lost again at Ohio State. This was a game that Rutgers fans were kind of saying, hey, this is going to be our year. Why? Because Ohio State just last week got absolutely hammered by Maryland. All right? Embarrassed. It was never a game. Maryland ran Ohio State back to Columbus, and they were up 40 points in that game. Maryland won 83-59. So why wouldn't you think? Why wouldn't you think that you could finally go into Columbus and win a game in a building where you've never won before, 0-8? Well, when you have a young team and your two best players are freshmen, and arguably your three best players, I'll throw Lathan Somerville in there, a freshman, life on the road in the Big Ten can be awfully lonely and awfully miserable, especially when you don't defend. And really, that's what the story is for this Rutgers team. They don't know how to defend. Or is it they don't want to defend? I'm sure they want to defend, but they don't know how. And there's not enough time to teach freshmen, no matter how talented they are offensively, to defend when you're trying to win games. It's hard. No matter how good you are offensively, you have to get stops at some point. And they couldn't stop anybody. I mean, Bruce Thornton, I'm sure he heard all about how great Dylan Harper was. Well, Bruce Thornton might be the best guard, as Steve Peichel pointed out, in the Big Ten. He was third team all Big Ten last year, and he is just tearing it up this year. I mentioned before in my last podcast, his assist to turnover ratio is one of the best in the country, 6-1. Well, he and Devin Royal were just a dynamic duo, inside outside wrecking crew. They had 22 points apiece. Royal had a career high and just ate up Lathan Somerville inside, abused him. And what Ohio State did, right? They're one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, but they saw something inside. And other teams will do the same thing. If you have an advantage in the paint against Rutgers, then do it. Go to it. Take advantage of it. Rutgers outscored 46-18 in the paint. So a team that came in noted as a three-point shooting team, shot 55% in both halves, and they shut down Harper and Bailey, who had 6 points combined in the first half, right? They came in averaging 42 points per game, Harper and Bailey, and they were shut down. And we saw this, okay? The supporting cast, I've said it and I'll say it again, Rutgers will only go as far as their supporting cast can push them. Harper and Bailey can only do so much offensively. And when one or both, which was the case in this game, when one or both are off, who is it going to be? Who is going to step up and help this team offensively? Because it wasn't Jeremiah Williams in this game. 2 points. Inexcusable for the captain. 2 points, 1 for 6. It cannot happen if Rutgers wants to win, especially on the road. Is it Jordan Durkak? Is it Zach Martini, who at this point, we love him, but he seems to be overmatched at this level. They need to fight. Layton Somerville tried offensively, but he's not the answer yet. So if Harper and Baylor are doing what they did and they're being held, then there are issues with this team. And Bailey, if you watch the game, my fear for him coming in was not his talent. I mean, he is an incredible talent. But it just seems to me like he is taking shots to get his shots. I'm old school, I'll admit it, but I don't like his shot selection. I just feel like there's too many times where he's jacking up shots, and sure, he can make them. He can make an 18-foot fadeaway from the baseline with two guys in his face because he's that good. But is it a good shot? He's not going to shoot 50% like that. It just seems like when he takes shots, he's just, okay, it's my turn now. And he's auditioning for the NBA. That's what I see. You can disagree with me, but that's my take. Whereas Harper does it within the offense and takes what the defense gives him. I feel like Harper's doing it within the flow of the offense, and Bailey's doing it to create his own offense. And that's the difference between those two superstar freshmen. You need to get Bailey on the same page because in some ways he's hurting the team as talented as he is. Those two are going to help Rutgers win a lot of games this year, but they need help. And Steve Peichel admitted after the game, and he said it, you know, it's becoming a problem. The defense is a problem, and this is a guy who has made his life, his living, his reputation off of defense. And it's got to be driving Steve Peichel crazy that he has the worst defensive team in the Big Ten. The worst. They're giving up, they're scoring 81 points a game, but they're giving up 75. That has never happened. He's always first or second in the Big Ten in points allowed. Now he's at the bottom, and it's not even an 18-team league, and he's dead last. This team is not, mark my words, they are not going to the NCAA tournament until they learn how to play defense and they do it consistently. You cannot win with two superstar freshmen playing offense and not defending at the other end. There's just not enough talent on this team. There's not a supporting cast. So Penn State's coming up, guys, okay? And this Penn State team is damn good. I believe their net is like 18, which to me seems inflated, but this is as close to a must-win game as you can have in December. I'm not going to call it a must-win because there's still some 20 games left, okay? And 18 more Big Ten games. Plenty of games, but it's as close to a must-win game as you can get. You check the boxes. As of now, it would be a quad one win, All right, if they remain in the top 30 in the net, but right now it'll be a quad one win. You're going up against the highest scoring team, the highest scoring team in the Big Ten. Penn State is averaging 90 points a game, and they just buried Purdue, a top 10 team, handily at home. So this team's good. And if Rutgers goes 0-2 in the Big Ten with Seton Hall coming in, as bad as Seton Hall is, as bad as they are, it's a rivalry game. And if we've learned anything the past 2 years in this rivalry, the better team lost each of the last 2 years on their home court. Okay? You don't have to go back 5, 10 years. Just go back the past 2 years. The better team lost on their home court. So you better beat Penn State. You better defend. This game is going to be in the 80s, maybe in the 90s. Can you outscore Penn State? Yeah, but you don't want it to get there. You need to defend. So a big week coming up for a lot of our teams. Big test coming up for UConn. Huge test coming up. Two games for Rutgers. And Seton Hall has to look in the mirror and decide where they're going from here with their rivals just a few days away on Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Rack National Television. All right, I'll get to the MAC and I'll get to the Ivy League next podcast that's coming up very soon. I've lined up Jim Engels, the head coach of Columbia and former head coach of NJIT. He will be my next guest. We'll talk Ivy League, we'll talk Columbia, and a little bit of MAC there as well on the next podcast, I promise you. Before we go, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577, and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Enjoy the games, everyone. I'm Brian DeNovellis. So long.